From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, a journey to the end of time. Here's what's happening. Well, shootings occur elsewhere, too. Police killed a masked man who stormed a German movie theater and was believed to have fired shots and taken hostages. The unidentified man was killed after police commandos gathered around the complex about 40 miles south of Frankfurt, following reports that shots had been fired inside. According to the Associated Press, no one was shot by the gunman, but German media said dozens were treated for exposure to tear gas. A very powerful tornado killed 51 people, just wiped them out and destroyed large numbers of buildings in eastern Chinese province. The tornado hit near a small city there where a large number of people were injured, roads were blocked, and 50 people killed. Well, the United Kingdom has voted by 52% to 48% to leave the European Union after 43 years in an historic referendum. London and Scotland voted strongly to stay in the EU, but the Remain vote has been undermined by poor results in the northern part of England. How that affects all of us, we shall see, but the British pound dropped 11% against the dollar already in markets overnight there. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has trumpeted the success of a very powerful new mid-range ballistic missile test that state media said will propel one of the weapons more than 870 miles high, saying it would allow strikes on U.S. forces throughout the region. Here's Charles R. Smith. He's an expert in that region. Charles, more rhetoric? What's going on there?
Well, it's very clear that the North Koreans have upped their game. The Musdan intermediate-range ballistic missile is what we refer to as a Generation 2-class ballistic missile. It has what they refer to as hypergolic fuel, which means that it is a liquid-fueled missile, but it's similar to our old Titan II in that the fuel is storable at room temperature. And this is also a mobile missile. It can be mounted on their MAZ 543, which is a mobile launch erector. And essentially, you can hide one of these in the woods, fuel it up, fire it away. And you're looking about a 1,200 to 1,500-mile range with a 2,000-pound warhead. So perfect, absolutely perfect for carrying a nuclear warhead in the intermediate-range mode. It is also quite capable of being launched from a submarine as well.
So at what point, Charles, does somebody come in, like the United States, and shut them down?
I'm not sure that that would actually be a wise thing to do. We're going to have to sit back and watch this one. Trying to take on North Korea would sort of be like trying to take on East Germany. It can be done. They would very well likely fire a few of these things off, seeing as how they are mobile, they can hide them, and they probably have somewhere in the order of about 50 or 60 of them. And the other problem is, again, just like trying to take East Germany, when you've got it, what are you going to do? You're looking at, because the Hermit Kingdom is so messed up, it would probably take close to $1 trillion just trying to bring them into the 20th century.
But, you know,
one of the reasons why the South Koreans have absolutely no intention of ever invading the North, it'd be way too expensive to rehabilitate.
No, I agree with that. But, I mean, videos they make of U.S. cities being destroyed, you know, the rhetoric that we can reach U.S. troops. I mean, that's not very wise, Charles, is it?
From their point of view, it's rather a good policy because the way they see it, they can extort us for good, hard, cold cash by making these kinds of claims. Nobody would be paying attention to North Korea unless it had nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles to deliver them. Plus, this is a rather good export item. They've already probably, according to some of the sources, transferred about 19 or 20 of them to Iran. So,
great.
For all practical purposes, you could say the genie is out of the bottle Well, we're just going to have to sit back and watch.
The new president is going to have one heck of a time. The Supreme Court has placed new limits on state laws that make it a crime for motorists suspected of drunken driving to refuse alcohol tests. The justices ruled that police must obtain a search warrant before requiring drivers to take blood alcohol tests, but not breath tests, which the court considers less intrusive. Looking at your smartphone while lying in bed at night could wreak havoc on your vision. Take heed. Two women went temporarily blind from constantly checking their phones in the dark, and the doctors who are now alerting others to this unusual phenomenon say, you better be careful. A brain-eating amoeba took the life of a teenager who went on a church trip in Charlotte, North Carolina. The 18-year-old Ohio woman died of this rare but fatal brain infection caused by the amoeba. Let's check in with Dr. Gary Ridenour on this. Geez, Gary, what the heck is this thing all about?
Well, this is called Naegleria fowleri. It's a single-cell organism. It's an amoeba, and it usually eats bacteria. It lives in warm ponds, lakes, rivers, poorly chlorinated public pools, and even lives in your aquarium. And it's an accidental parasite. If you inhale it, it goes up into your nose, follows the nerve pathways up into your brain, and begins to eat brain tissue. After it gets into the brain, you got about 3 to 7 days, and you are dead.
Oh, my God. There's no way to prevent it, is there?
Well, there's a drug called amphotericin B, an antibiotic, but the problem is by the time you get to making the diagnosis, it's too late.
It's too late. Just another thing for us to worry about in the Zika virus and everything else. Thank you very much, Gary. Led Zeppelin did not plagiarize the opening chords of the rock epic Stairway to Heaven from the U.S. band Spirit, according to a Los Angeles jury. It said the riff Led Zeppelin was accused of taking from Spirit's 1967 song Taurus was not similar to Stairway's opening. Let's check in with our Gary Patterson, who on my live stage show in St. Louis predicted what the jury would decide. Well, Gary, there you go. They didn't take it, right?
Yep.
Just like that.
Hello?
Gary, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, so the jury says, as you predicted, they did not take it.
They did not fake the song, take the song, even though when Zeppelin came over on their first tour, they actually opened up for Spirit. So there was a possibility, I'm sure, that they had to have heard the song. And it's like Robert Plant said, he couldn't remember hanging out with that guy. He can't remember hanging out with anybody in the past 40 years. So, yeah, I don't think you could actually plagiarize a minor chord progression that descends. If that was the case, Keith Richards would sue everybody for writing rock songs in E-DNA. So you have to have a significant part that was breached, and the jury found that wasn't true.
Would there have been a lot of money on the table on this one had they lost?
What, $40 million, I think?
That's a pretty good change.
It's a pretty good chunk of change.
You got it. Gary, thanks so much. Lisa Alamia is a Texan, and through and through, no doubt. But you wouldn't know it when she opens her mouth to speak. Now, she had surgery on her lower jaw a few months ago, and now she speaks with a British accent. It's unbelievable, but it is a syndrome. It happens. It's a rare condition. Diagnosed with what is called the foreign accent syndrome, it's an extremely rare condition when people speak with a different accent, usually after some kind of head trauma or stroke, but in her case, I guess it had to do with her oral surgery. In a moment, Watergate. Did it really happen? We're going to talk about Watergate the hoax with Ashton Gray next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. August 1974, then-President Richard Nixon resigned.
This is the 37th time I have spoken to you from this office, where so many decisions have been made that shaped the history of this nation. Each time I have done so to discuss with you some matter that I believe affected the national interest. In all the decisions I have made in my public life, I have always tried to do what was best for the nation. Throughout the long and difficult period of Watergate, I have felt it was my duty to persevere, to make every possible effort to complete the term of office to which you elected me. In the past few days, however, it has become evident to me that I no longer have a strong enough political base in the Congress to justify continuing that effort. As long as there was such a base, I felt strongly that it was necessary to see the constitutional process through to its conclusion, that to do otherwise would be unfaithful to the spirit of that deliberately difficult process, and a dangerously destabilizing precedent for the future. But with the disappearance of that base, I now believe that the constitutional purpose has been served, and there is no longer a need for the process to be prolonged. I would have preferred to carry through to the finish, whatever the personal agony it would have involved. And my family unanimously urged me to do so. But the interests of the nation must always come before any personal considerations. From the discussions I have had with congressional and other leaders, I have concluded that because of the Watergate matter, I might not have the support of the Congress that I would consider necessary to back the very difficult decisions and carry out the duties of this office in the way the interests of the nation will require. I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first. America needs a full-time president and a full-time Congress, particularly at this time with problems we face at home and abroad. To continue to fight through the months ahead for my personal vindication would almost totally absorb the time and attention of both the President and the Congress in a period when our entire focus should be on the great issue of peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Gosh, what a time that was, 1974. Ashton Gray began his lifelong love of writing as a copywriter for advertising agencies and as a contributor to the newspaper called the Kansas City Free Press during the days of the 60s and 70s. He went on to become an independent researcher, writer, editor for corporations, periodicals, book publishers as well. He has done work for clients such as Random House, Universal Studios, PBS, and he has written or ghostwritten 7 books. The research for Watergate, the hoax, spanned 20 years, resulting in a database of more than 13,000 entries from more than 2,000 sources. And here Ashton is on Coast to Coast. What a momentous time that was, Ashton, wasn't it?
Wasn't it, though, George? Pleasure to be with you this evening.
Likewise, too. For many people who might be too young to even remember Watergate, Ashton, tell us what the official version was of Watergate.
Well, the official version was that G. Gordon Liddy, E. Howard Hunt, and James McCord were sort of the masterminds of a break-in over Memorial Day weekend, 1972. There were supposedly 2 failed attempts on Friday and Saturday night, 26 and 27 May, and then on the 28th, they claimed that they actually got access to the Democratic National Committee headquarters in the Watergate building, and that James McCord planted 2 electronic bugs there. The story they gave was that one of the bugs failed, and although Alfred Baldwin, supposedly listened to one of the bugs and took logs, that they had to go back in on the 17th of June, supposedly, to fix the faulty bug. And that's the official story, that they were illegally eavesdropping on conversations of the Democratic political machinery. It's all a lie.
Did they really need this information to help Richard Nixon, for example?
Not at all. He was so far ahead in every poll. He had the entire campaign sewn up. So the entire supposed motivation is ridiculous.
Now, when you say, Ashton, that it was a hoax, that it wasn't real, what wasn't real? What happened? In your opinion, what really happened?
Well, based on my research, and I think it's gone well beyond mere opinion, over that long weekend, the Memorial Day weekend at the end of May.
In 72.
1972, they had what's called the Cuban contingent. That was Bernard Barker, Frank Sturgis, Eugenio Martinez, Virgilio Gonzalez, Felipe de Diego, and Reynaldo.
I call them the hobos during the John F. Kennedy assassination.
Well, some of them may have been, but I don't want to.
That's another story.
I don't want to go into that right now. But all of them definitely had CIA connections from the whole Bay of Pigs period, when Hunt, E. Howard Hunt, was also involved in that, and so was James McCord. So they all flew up from Miami to Washington, D.C. over that weekend, and they put on a huge dog and pony show that was very visible. For instance, on Friday night, the 26th of May, they had the big Emeritus dinner in the Watergate Continental Room. You know, and supposedly, I mean, the story these the confessions were that they were going to use that ruse to enter the building. There's so many contradictions and ridiculous statements and claims made in their, quote, confessions, that it's impossible if that's what they were doing. For instance, James McCord supposedly was going to disarm an alarm between the Continental Room and the main office building at a crucial time period, and they were going to sneak out of the Continental Room into the building. Well, Jim Hogan, a brilliant investigative author who wrote Secret Agenda, discovered there never had been an alarm on that door at all. I have a whole chapter devoted to the alarming clanging of the alarm that never was.
Well, Ashton, here's the $64,000 question. Yes. Why create this elaborate hoax of the official version we all think happened? Why create that?
Because they needed an ironclad alibi for the whereabouts D. Gordon Liddy, E. Howard Hunt, and James McCord for that weekend. And the way they did it was to plan to get arrested on the 17th of June, several weeks later, so they all could start, beginning with Alfred Baldwin, start their, quote, confessions. There's a Latin phrase that I wouldn't even attempt to to say. An academic can say it very well, but it's in Black's Law, and it says that a confession in court outweighs any evidence. And the sad truth about what we know as Watergate is there is not a single scrap of physical evidence anywhere that supports their, quote, confession.
Now, did Nixon, even though he resigned over this, we just heard this, did Nixon even know what was going on?
No. Nixon was like a deer in the headlights, to coin a phrase. It was like he'd been hit in the back of the head with a baseball bat, a lead-filled baseball bat. Richard Helms, the head of the CIA, had him completely framed before he knew which end was up.
Was this all an effort to nail Nixon, you think?
Yes. Yes, they had to get rid of Nixon because of the motive for the hoax and where these guys most likely were on that weekend.
All right, let's talk more about that, Ashton, when we come back. Ashton Gray with us, Watergate the hoax. He's done a lot of work, a lot of research into the official story of Watergate. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Our special guest tonight, Ashton Gray. His work is Watergate the Hoax. We're going to take calls with Ashton next hour here on Coast to Coast. And then later on, we're going to take a journey into time on Coast to Coast. Hey, so back to the Magical Mystery Tour. My next stop is going to be in Asheville, North Carolina on August 27th at a quaint theater called the Diana Wortham Theater. Tickets going fast. You can get full information at coasttocoastam.com at the highlight reel. You may see the pictures change, but just click the one there that has my event. And if you're in the greater Asheville area, just come on out. I'd love to have you out there. That's August 27th. That's not too far away. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Ashton Gray with us. His book, Watergate the Hoax, his website is chaletbooks.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. So you think, Ashton, if I'm reading this right, that this was a setup to get Richard Nixon out of office, or was there something else afoot?
Well, there was definitely something else afoot, but Nixon had to be collateral damage because he would never have gone along with what the CIA had planned. And they had to get rid of Nixon along with one other guy in the world.
Let's see. Let me guess. Who could that be?
Well,
was it Kissinger?
No, sir.
Wasn't Kissinger. Was it Haldeman? Ehrlichman?
No, sir. It was not a political entity.
Ah.
In fact, it was a philosopher or a religious leader, and his name was L. Ron Hubbard.
From the Church of Scientology?
The founder.
Whoa, how did he get tied into this?
Well, this is covered in the section of the book called The Motive, and it covers both the CIA's mind control programs, which I know you're familiar with, Bluebird, Artichoke, MK
yep.
Ultra. But at the same time, the CIA was in what I call the Coldest War. During the Cold War, which, you know, was covered by the major media, there was a colder war that was going on very much sub rosa, very much in the dark, and it was with the USSR in a race to have mastery over parapsychology, including ESP, telekinesis, and, of course, remote perception. The Defense Intelligence Agency put out a report in 1972 saying that the Soviet military and the KGB were behind a major impetus to try to harness telepathic communication, telekinetics, and bionics, and said they had at least 20 or more centers for the study of parapsychological phenomena. And the USSR apparently in 1972, leading up to 1972, had a budget of at least like $120 million in 20, you know, converted to current dollars.
Right.
So the CIA was in a desperate race, especially in the field of telekinesis, because the Soviets were even showing some videos of some women who apparently had highly developed skills in this area. And you can imagine the terror related to that in the context of nuclear weapons.
No.
So, the CIA was determined to get a monopoly on parapsychology.
This is an unbelievable twist to the story.
Well, yes, but they had been hounding Hubbard actually since 1950 when they tried to conscript him and seize and take control of Dianetics. Because it was the process of processes of that were exposing some of the mind control techniques that the CIA was using hypnosis, drugs. You know about Gottlieb and Switzerland.
Sure. Well, was there any point, Ashton, that L. Ron Hubbard played ball with the CIA, or was he always against whatever they were doing?
Well, this is the crux of the matter. He absolutely forbade any intelligence agency or agents anywhere in the world from any nation to get hold of his upper levels, which were, they were secret, they were confidential levels, called Operating Satan levels.
Operating Satan?
Satan, T-H-E-T-A-N. It was a word he coined to mean the spiritual being.
Satan, okay.
So, just think of it.
Thank God it's not Satan. Jeez.
No. not Operating Satan.
Yeah.
We would hope. But he released something not long before Watergate happened. It was called Operating Satan Level 6. And it stated as its ability gained something that was exactly what the CIA and the KGB were after. And can I read the ability gained for OT6?
Yeah, a little bit of it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not long. It says, ability to operate freely as a Satan, T-H-E-T-A-N, exterior. That means outside the body, as in an out-of-body experience. And to act pan-determinedly, meaning across a number of different viewpoints, extends the influence of the Satan, T-H-E-T-A-N, to the universe of others. Well, this was exactly what the CIA wanted, and it's exactly what was used to develop their remote viewing program.
And they figured they needed to get it from Hubbard. So with Hubbard not playing ball, what did they want to do? Remove him or get him assassinated? What was their plan?
Yes.
All of the above, huh?
All of the above. He had to be removed. He had to be either incapacitated or assassinated. Or they would never be able to seize his technology to develop remote viewing. Although I think remote viewing was actually when they finally said, you know, in 1995, I believe, they finally said, okay, we've been doing
it. They admitted it. It was going on way before that.
Yeah. Well, 1972, 1 October 1972 is the date of the secret contract they issued to Hal Puthoff at SRI.
And Ingo Swann, all right?
Exactly. Hal Puthoff was himself an OT-7. He was a Scientology OT-7. And this is very curious because Puthoff had come out of the National Security Agency, the NSA. And before he got into Scientology. And the book actually deals with this issue that given that Hubbard had issued a decree that no one with those kinds of connections could get access to the OT level, I say we because it's my research
association,
yep. I had to figure out how did he do it. And Ingo Swann also had secret and top secret clearances. But somehow he went into Scientology and also went up to OT-7. And then there was a third man named Pat Price, who was an OT-3, and that was the core of the CIA's remote viewing program when it started just 2 weeks after the indictments were handed down on the Watergate perpetrator.
Gosh, Ashton, was my aunt part of this, Dr. Caregula?
There's an interesting anecdote about her. When Ingo Swann was doing his remote viewing experiments at the American Society for Psychical Research in New York, ASPR, he was using the Museum of Natural History. Now, you probably know that your aunt did some experiments in Psi abilities at that museum.
Right. She was into telepathy and precognition and everything in a big way.
Yes, and she had one of her adepts or sensitives, a person who had psychic abilities. She took this person there, and the person looked at the gemstone collection and would read sort of the aura or the emanation or wavelength coming off of each individual gem, like it was a different one for diamonds or quartz. And when Ingo Swann, he admired your aunt, great.
Yeah, they were very close.
Yes. Well, he did some of his remote viewing experiments also using the Museum of Natural History, and the gemstone collection played a rather large part in it. Well, guess what G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt named their phony, quote, plan for political spying that resulted in Watergate, the hoax?
What'd they call it?
Gemstone.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Synchronous. Now, back to L. Ron Hubbard for a second. He dies in 1986, you know, way after Watergate, so they obviously didn't get to him. What happened?
Well, that, again, is the official story, and I'm afraid we've gone into the domain of the sequel, The Watergate, the Hoax, which is called Stargate, the Hoax, and which is in progress right now.
When's that come out?
Probably next year around this time.
All right. Count on coming back for that.
Okay, I will. But it covers this whole period post-Watergate, when Hubbard supposedly was alive, but strangely enough, he always was in hiding with only a small little group of people around him.
Are you saying he didn't die in 86, that he may have died earlier?
Well,
sounds like a Paul McCartney bit.
His body may have died in 86. See, we won't know unless and until the CIA is disassembled brick by brick and all their files are spilled into the street. And even then, you know, Helms and Gottlieb destroyed so many files in early 1973, right after Watergate, to cover up their crimes. But, you know, Hubbard, a lot of the research has pointed to the idea that Hubbard likely was abducted in 1972, but not killed, only incapacitated.
Wow.
With psychiatric treatment such as psychosurgery,
jeez,
drugs, and possibly electroshock, all things that he campaigned heavily against.
So let's review this for a second, Eston.
Yes, sir.
You're saying, if I'm reading you correctly, that uh-huh. Watergate was a hoax, was a setup in order to try to get more information, not from the Democratic National Committee,
but
they wanted information on psychic research, remote viewing, and all of that. Am I reading that right?
Well, they wanted to steal his upper level. They wanted to steal Hubbard's intellectual property, the OT level. They wanted to have them as a monopoly, and they wanted to put out phony versions for the public to believe were the real things. And I think that's what they've accomplished. And if Hubbard had been either alive or in total control of his faculties and in control of the Organization of Scientology, from all the research we've done, he never would have stood for it. But on October 1st, 1972, the CIA issued this contract to Hal Putoff, Ingo Swann, and Pat Price. And by the way, can I mention one thing? There are some not bright, quite bright people who have suggested that it was pure happenstance that the beginning of the CIA's remote viewing program had as its core three Scientology OTs. Well, I contacted a prominent mathematician, and I said, would you compute the odds for me, please? What are the odds that just by chance the CIA happened to pick three people who who not only had gone into Scientology, but had gone all the way up into their secret top level that had a prerequisite of the Scientology state of clear. And this mathematician took the population figures of the United States in 72 and the number of clears that existed, so, and that's even generous. And here's what, the math is in the book, but it worked out to odds of about 1 in 200 trillion.
Yow.
So the CIA had an agenda, and that agenda was Scientology.
Was Gerald Ford part of this? You know, he became president after Richard Nixon stepped down, but was he in the know of any of this?
Oh, all the evidence points to absolutely, going all the way back to the Warren Commission. And Ford was instrumental in getting Liddy placed in the Treasury Department, which was the stepping stone to get Liddy into the White House. So, and Ford, I'm sure he was witting, because when he came into office, he was the first president knowingly over this remote viewing program, and he took as his vice president Nelson Rockefeller, who had his own, contretemps with Hubbard and Scientology. Nixon hated Hubbard and Scientology, hated them. There's even a book, a chapter in the book called The Nixon Problem, and it consists mainly of a long write-up by L. Ron Hubbard stating how Nixon hated them. So that's why Nixon had to be removed.
This, you know, this is amazing. Now, if you were to tell Bernstein and Woodward what was going on, would they believe this?
They're comedians. They wrote fiction, and Woodward at least knew it was fiction. I'm sorry. He also had come out of intelligence just before he got with the Washington Post. And, you know, the Washington Post was part of the CIA's Operation Mockingbird, which was the propaganda campaign the CIA had going with all the major media outlets. So they are the primary purveyors of the, quote, official story.
Now, and in terms of L. Ron Hubbard, I never had the opportunity to interview him. How about you?
No, I did not. I got involved in this long after he was dead, even if you take the 1986 date. This research started around 1996 by some anomalies that turned up and the enormous number of contradictions in the, quote, confessions of the perpetrators.
I wish Ingo Swann were still alive.
Well, you know, I went on a little detective mission in researching this book with a dear friend of mine, Meredith Wilson from Georgia, and she's the most clever little amateur detective you ever want to know. And people have said, you know, that Swann had left Scientology and he really wasn't. Didn't attribute it, you know, his abilities to Scientology.
Right.
I may have to find it. It may take me a minute, but I have a quote from him that completely lays that entirely to rest, because he absolutely attributes his ability to control these phenomena to Scientology and the processing or auditing, that they call, which they call it, in Scientology.
Well, and there's no doubt in my mind, Ashton, that the abilities of remote viewing are real. And if you've got some people like Ingo Swann, help put off Russell Targ, those kinds of folks, Ed Dames, those people know how to do this and do this well. I can only imagine the CIA going crazy trying to get this together.
Right. May I read you Ingo Swann's quote that I was referring to?
We're going to wait until after the break on that, because we're coming up. As far as the book, The Watergate, The Hoax, where can people get it?
They can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks, all the usual places. And right now it's at the introductory price of $5.99. But
that's it?
On the 28th, it's going to go up to $13.
Okay, well, stay with us. We're going to hit the break, and we're going to come right back after the top of the hour. We will open up the phone lines as well. An amazing story. Ashton Gray, Watergate the hoax, believing that the CIA was really after techniques of remote viewing, and they wanted to get it from the Church of Scientology, from L. Ron Hubbard. We'll be back.